Another phase for JDS Uniphase, the Cardboard Box Indicator and Wall Street, and Napster and MP3 sing the blues. It is Wednesday, March 7th, 2001. E-Trade On Air is next.
I'm E-Trade On Air's Kate Bonner.
And I'm Jonathan Honig, Portfolio Manager at Capitalist Pig Asset Management in Chicago. 30 minutes ahead of the opening bell, and we have green on the screen. Dow futures are up 38 points. The Nasdaq futures are almost 40 points higher. Why? Well, blame it on Avi Joseph Cohn, the influential strategist over at Goldman Sachs, upgrading, I should say, her portfolio equity weighting this morning. Kate, now she's got 70% of her portfolio in stocks, and that's up from 65% just a few days ago. So obviously, some very intelligent market watchers saying that, hey, maybe it's time to get back on the train.
Jonathan, rah, rah, rah. This morning, I personally am going to be the proverbial bucket of cold water. I mean, sure, the institutional and individual investors have put together 2 days of a rally on the street. But, you know, Jonathan, we talk about the initial public offering market, the IPOs, as a leading indicator of consumer confidence. And Monday, we were rah-rahing away, saying that the market's expected 6 IPOs to be on the docket this week to price, expecting to raise about $800 million. Well, hey, it's Wednesday. One has priced. Last night, Seattle Genetics, Inc., which is a cancer drug development company backed by Microsoft founders Bill Gates and Paul Allen. Initially, this stock was supposed to price between 11 and 13 bucks a share. Well, last night, 7 million shares priced at 7 bucks. So if we do see the IPO market, Jonathan, as a leading indicator of consumer confidence, that ain't so bullish. Just a quick word of caution.
Not as enthusiastic, maybe, as some analysts would hope. And still a lot of earnings warnings. I know JDS Uniphase, Dow Jones, Intel. So a lot of stocks on the move.
Although you're right. Avi Joseph Cohn putting 70% of her portfolio in stocks. That's a big move.
She's like E.F. Hutton. When she speaks, people listen. All right.
Okay, so more to come. You're listening to E-Trade On Air.
Now 28 minutes ahead of the opening bell. It's time for Stock Talk. This is where we get an idea of stocks to watch today. Joining us on the line is Greg Temmel. He is market analyst and CEO at Beyond the Bull. That's a website that gives market analysis in plain English. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
So Abby likes this market. Do you?
Oh, God. I love Abby.
All right. You might love Abby, but do you love the market? And what stocks are you watching today?
This is Hit Me With Your Best Shot Wednesday. These are three stocks. Veritas, Xilinx, and TriQuint Semiconductors that, despite bad news, seem to be moving. They've done so over the last few days, and it looks like they're going to keep moving today.
Let's talk about Veritas first. Ticker there is VRTS. On Monday, the company reiterated its first quarter guidance. It expects to do about 20 cents a share. What do you think of this stock? Because Needham cut its price target to $80 a share from $140 a share.
Well, I think, like Veritas, I'm going to go with Prudential, who still has a price target of 110 as opposed to 80, although they did have one at 175. And in a move not to get oracled, they did come out and they did say, hey, you know what? We're on target. Over the last few days, the stock has risen from a low of 57.5 over the last 5 days to 67.75. Getting ready to open up another point and a quarter higher at 69. This looks to be a stock on the move for momentum traders.
Xilinx is another stock I know. XLNX you're watching. Company lowered its Q4 estimates. What do you see in the next couple of days for Xilinx?
Well, it's the same thing. This is another one of those stocks that wants to come out and warn while the market's ready to pay dividends to those who warn and kind of cough up the truth. Don't tell me a lie and we won't punish you. It came out and said that its revenue is going to be as low as $382 million when the expectation was 481. It closed at 45.25 yesterday. It was down 36 a few days ago. And again, it's bid up again this morning at 46. Momentum stock number two for the day.
And let's talk about TriQuint quickly. Ticker there is TQNT. Last trade, $20 a share. This is a semiconductor stock. And Greg, I know they haven't fared necessarily that great as of late.
No, they haven't. But over the last few days, like with the whole NASDAQ in general, it started to turn around. It's been down at 17. It's bounced back to about 20. It's pushing 20.5, 21 today. Tuesday. Again, they slashed their earnings going forward by about 12%, and they dropped their earnings estimate down to about 14 cents a share from, I think, 16 or 17 cents. But again, another stock with a decent PE that wants to move regardless of bad earnings.
Recapping, of course, Veritas Software, ticker there VRTS, Xilinx XLNX, and TriQuint Semiconductor, ticker there is TQNT. Greg, good trading today. I guess in Abby we trust, right?
Sorry, me, Tom, singing today. Have a wonderful trading day.
Yeah, we put an end to that real quick. Don't worry.
I appreciate that.
Greg Temple is market analyst and CEO at BeyondTheBull.com, 25 minutes ahead of the opening bell.
Stock Talk is brought to you in part by IBM, taking e-business and your business to the next level.
Jonathan, the empire of soup is striking back. Yes, the Campbell's Soup Company is seeking to stem further erosion of its once commanding lead in the American soup market. It is responding to those attack ads by Progresso. Have you seen these ads?
The soup wars are heating up.
Basically, Progresso is maintaining that, you know, when you grow up and you're a yuppie and you're successful, you eat Progresso. But when, you know, that sort of Campbell's is kind of ruthlessly collegiate. But anyway, Progresso, which is owned by Diageo, is fighting back. And joining us later in the hour is Jim Harris. He, you may remember, is the CEO and founder of ThoughtStep, which is a Chicago-based marketing firm. And he will shed light on the power of the brand and how it can affect you as the individual investor.
Yeah, because you think soup is soup, right? Progresso is, they probably got some good soups. And Campbell's probably has a couple of... I'm a soup man, so I like soup.
I'm a soup lady.
Yeah, I'm a tomato
soup lady.
Yeah, well, I don't know tomato soup this morning, Kate, but a lot of green on the screen. Dow futures are now up 47 points. NASDAQ futures are 40 and a half higher, so we will see some buying on the open, largely on the strength of a bullish call from Goldman Sachs' Abby Joseph Cohn. When she talks, people listen. 24 minutes ahead of the opening bell.
Let's check in with our news guru, Tom Hudson from WebFN's news desk. What's on the headlines?
Morning, Kate. Well, Timmel may not want me to sing anymore, but Napster and MP3 are certainly singing the blues this morning. Uncle Sam going after a Citigroup division. And our third story that we'll get inside is A-Rod cashes in on Radio Shack. First of all, though, let's talk about Napster here, Kate. Napster has been ordered by a federal judge to block access to any copyrighted material. This is really not new news here. We've been talking about this for a few days now, but this time the judge stepping in late yesterday telling Napster, no, listen, really, I'm serious. You do have to step in and block access to copyrighted material. Has 3 days now to put up some filters on the internet. The clock starts when the big record companies give Napster a list of the songs they want blocked from the online sharing service. Napster and one of its media partners, in fact, the only big media partner it has, Bertelsmann, BMG, eventually want Napster users to pay a subscription fee for the service. They're still trying to work out licensing deal with record companies, but they haven't had much luck at all. Another lawsuit here, we've got an award against MP3.com. That may spell trouble for that company.
Exactly. Do you see the tears welling up in Jonathan Honig's eyes as we speak about Napster? Well, I do want to talk about this. We often talk about MP3 when we discuss Napster. The ticker on that is MPPP. Well, a U.S. district judge ruled that, you know, MP3 has already paid an estimated $133 million to end its disputes with the five major record labels. Now it turns out it has exposure to further damages infringing on copyrights held by TV Tunes Inc., which is an independent label. Let's take a look at the stock. MP3, last trade 2.78, down from about $10 in November of last year. So we will have to check out MP3 as the day goes on.
From online music to banks now, the Federal Trade Commission filing with the federal court a complaint charging Associates First Capital with predatory lending, some pretty serious charges here. This is a unit of Citigroup, ticker symbol C. Now, Kate, it's accused of deceptive marketing, trying to get customers to consolidate debts into what the feds considered high-cost, high-interest-rate loans, refinanced home loans. The unit's also accused of persuading customers to buy some expensive credit insurance. Now, what the FTC has done here is they're using some pretty strong language. Listen to this. This is a direct quote from one of the FTC commissioners. Hiding essential information. Associates First Capital misrepresented loan terms, flipped loans, packed on optional fees, and raised the cost of the loans to some of the most needy customers. Citigroup bought First Associates back in November as part, in part for the to get the regulatory okay to acquire First Associates First Capital. Citigroup promised to clean up some of the loan practices. Citigroup says they are continuing to clean up this, but the FTC steps in and says any kind of settlement here with Associates First Capital could cost into the hundreds of millions of dollars.
You know, Tom, this brings up the issue of sort of due diligence. We all know that Sanford Weill, chairman of Citigroup, is quite acquisitive, has bought quite a few banks recently, the latest being EAB. But it brings up the issue of due diligence. Did they know about these practices before buying the bank? Citigroup, ticker C, last trade there is 48.63 cents, off about 5% for the year.
We'll have to watch to see if there's any reaction from Wall Street with these new charges leveled against Citigroup. And finally, A-Rod, who's Alex Rodriguez, of course, a shortstop player for the Texas Rangers. He's already the highest paid professional baseball player, $252 million over 10 years. Not even Honig can do that at second base with the softball team here at E-Trade. Now listen, this is the richest contract in sports. Why does Wall Street care at all about A-Rod? He signed a 3-year deal to become a spokesman for Radio Shack, RSH. You know Radio Shack. It sells everything from computers to mini plugs to change your headphones around. Rodriguez had sponsorship deals. Listen to this roster: Nike, Giorgio Armani, Armor Hot Dogs, even a jet service company. Now he's the spokesman for Radio Shack. Radio Shack also in a pretty big deal with Major League Baseball in the All-Star Game.
You know, Honig only has Armani there, you know.
And that's a division of Tandy, correct, Radio Shack?
Radio Shack is a separately traded company under the symbol RSH.
Indeed, but let's bring it back to the stock for a second. Radio Shack has done quite well. We got some bad news out of Circuit City yesterday, but February sales were up 7%, again in February, on strength of audiovisual and computers.
We'll see how many baseball fans are on Wall Street today with Radio Shack shares. RSH.
Last trade, $41.53.
And that's inside the headlines.
Time now for It's Your Money, our daily look at personal finance. Today, dividends.
If you own shares of a company that pays dividends, you can either take the cash or reinvest the money, which is right for you. E-Trade On Air correspondent Chris Chan has more.
Companies that pay dividends to shareholders can provide steady income to investors. Cynthia Heil of Provise Management Group recommends that these funds be put back into the market.
We typically recommend that clients reinvest. That allows you to build your account value and buy more shares of whatever stock or mutual fund you're investing in. You do want to keep in mind that you are still going to have to pay taxes on any dividends that are paid on the stock or the mutual fund, whether you reinvest or take them in cash.
The regular return on your money can be important when stocks are not performing well, and the stability can also prove valuable to those nearing the age of retirement. For more on dividends and what to do with them, go to the Smart Money University at smartmoney.com. I'm Chris Chan, and it's your money.
And you know, Kate, those dividend-paying stocks have actually really done well as of late. They've outperformed the S&P 500. They've outperformed the NASDAQ. And once again, going to prove that, you know, you can't have all your money just in one sector. Dividends have been a great place to be.
I think when in the fall, during the tech wreck, there were a lot of money poured into these old economy stocks because people were saying, hey, if the stock doesn't go up, at least I get the dividend. Mm-hmm. I mean, take a look at Caterpillar for a second. The ticker on that is CAT, upgraded this morning by Morgan Stanley. Caterpillar pays $1.36 in a dividend, which is a 3.06% yield.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the long-term average people always quote for stocks is about 12%. But what a lot of people don't know is that about 5% of that total return actually comes from the dividend yield. So, if you are getting dividends, make sure to have them reinvested, I think, as that expert recommended. And dividends ain't trash. Cash ain't trash either. But the cash quiz is certainly not trash. And that's what's next here on E-Trade On Air. Every day I ask a question and you all write in with an answer. The winner gets a brand new E-Trade On Air t-shirt. Abby Joseph Cohen in the news this morning. She is, of course, the chief market strategist at Goldman Sachs and Company, raising her equity allocation to 70% from 65%. Now, a recent Fortune.com story rated her as the 8th most powerful woman in business. Who is the most powerful woman in business? Kate, it's not you. It's not you. Despite what... Kate, it should be you, but it's not you. Who is the most powerful woman in business according to Fortune.com?
Kate Bonner.
Is it A, Carly Fiorina from Hewlett-Packard, B, Debbie Hopkins from Lucent Technology, or C, Meg Whitman, she is president and CEO at eBay? A, B, or C's. Carly, Debbie, or Meg, take a guess and email us at etradeonair@etrade.com. We'll have the answer coming up a little later in the show. Dow Futures up 42 points.
Coming up in the next half hour here on E-Trade On Air, value funds back in vogue. We'll check in with the money manager and get his take on the value funds. Of course, checking the wave with Market Surfer and all the market talk and the pre-market action at the Chicago Board Options Exchange. All next at E-Trade On Air.
Minutes ahead of the opening bell. You're listening to E-Trade On Air. I'm Jonathan Honig. There's a lot of different ways to invest your money. And right now, with so much volatility, value stocks are really worth looking into. They've outperformed the major indices, and they've really been a terrific place to be, especially if you can get good diversification through a value-oriented mutual fund. Joining us on the line now is William Naskovitz. He's founder of Milwaukee-based Heartland Advisors. They specialize in a value-oriented style, which basically means, Bill, if I'm correct, in looking for stocks that are, quote-unquote, undervalued in the marketplace.
Well, that's a good way to put it. Undervalued in relation to what we believe their intrinsic worth. I mean, what they are worth to a strategic buyer, perhaps. We look at classic valuation metrics like earnings, cash flows, and book values. Things that are becoming more and more in vogue these days. You know, as the Nasdaq has swooned. 60% almost.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? I mean, it was 1 year ago this week, the Nasdaq was trading about 55% higher, and terms like book value and earnings and growth or revenues seemed almost passé, but value stocks are very much back in vogue. Why are you guys so passionate about value-oriented investing?
Well, it works. It works over the long term. It hasn't, outperformed, during these these mega momentum years of, 97, 98, 90, part of 2000. But, over the last year or year and a half, it has outperformed the growth momentum style. And it provides some downside protection as well, meaning low PE stocks, in most cases, probably have already discounted the worst and have little to fall if the market drops 60%, let's say, as the Nasdaq did. A lot of these low PE stocks had already been in bear markets for 2 or 3 years and already were selling at compelling valuations.
PE, of course, refers to price earnings ratios. Bill, let's talk a bit about one of your top holdings. I know this is held in your Heartland Value Fund. Ticker there is HRTVX. The stock is ICN Pharmaceuticals. Tell me a bit about the company and why you like it.
Well, ICN is actually the Heartland Value Fund is a small cap fund. ICN is one of our larger cap holdings. We initially purchased the stock 5 or 6 years ago when it was a single digit midget, so to speak, and had no Wall Street coverage. Today it's doing about $1 billion in sales and sells for around 26. The excitement here is the potential of a combination therapy with Schering-Plough with hepatitis C. It's a $1 billion drug, and this company, we feel, has earning power of $2 a share. The stock is trading for 26. They've also increased their R&D this year, doubling it to over $40 million. So they're actively pursuing additional drugs, and the stock is a laggard. Most pharmaceuticals with earnings are selling, 30 times earnings plus, and many biotech companies are selling at 30 times sales. So we think on a relative basis and also on an absolute basis, the stock makes sense.
We're speaking with William Naskovitz. He is founder of Milwaukee-based Heartland Advisors. Bill, we just have a second left, but I want to ask you, at a time which the Nasdaq is so decidedly underwater, why do you think are so many investors intent on trying to pick a bottom in the Nasdaq rather than going to where the areas of strength has been and areas like the small cap value, like small cap stocks, that still sport reasonable valuations?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's human nature, that people think that, let's just take the Nasdaq index. Even though it's dropped this horrific amount, It looks cheap, but is it really? You know, it's selling at 90 times earnings. The NASDAQ 100, for example, I think is trading at, the top 100 stocks are trading at almost close to 100 times earnings.
Not cheap in your book.
Not cheap. I mean, that's 1% on your money. If you pay $100 for anything that throws off a buck in earnings, that's 1%. That doesn't seem too attractive to us. You can do better in money markets, can't you?
Bill Naskovitz is founder of Milwaukee-based Heartland Advisors. 20 minutes after the opening bell.
Jonathan, Tom, airlines are sure to be in the news today. Yesterday, we had the news that Carl Icahn backed that late bid for TWA, forcing delay in American Airlines' expected winning bid. Today, we see that Delta could see a hit today, said its latest pilot contract proposal would boost pilot costs by 25% this year. And then the third story, airline story in the news, we've got the top three airlines, Delta, United, American, DAL, UAL, AMR, tickers there, warned corporate clients. I think this is interesting, Tom, we're discussing this, that they could lose volume discounts if they disclose detailed data to Continental about employees' travel.
Yeah, these are the huge corporate clients, of course, that buy volume discounts. You know, they say that we're going to travel so much on United Airlines this year. Give us a volume discount on the number of business flights that we get. What Continental wants these guys to do is they want to come back to Continental saying, if you are one of our volume discount customers and you're also a volume discount customer of, say, United and American, we want to know what you're paying for those tickets on United and American and Delta. And United, American, and Delta say, no way. We're not going to tell you what kind of ticket prices we're giving our volume clients.
The competition in this space is so hot. Tom, we were talking just yesterday about some of the online services that are competing for people's businesses, whether it's Priceline, and this is in the retail space, whether it's Priceline.com or Expedia,
Travelocity. Expedia.
It's a good time to be a consumer, but a tough time to be an airline.
Well, also, what's interesting, the Wall Street Journal reported this morning that both Johnson & Johnson and American Express have refused to disclose this data to Continental. So we should see, as the days progress, if this will become a trend.
Absolutely. And see if the Continental share price gets hit by any of this.
If they want to save some money, why don't they get rid of the little throw-up bag? You know what I'm talking about? No one ever uses it.
Now listen, if someone's sitting next to you on the next Capitalist Pig jaunt down to Boca Raton.
We rent our own planes.
Okay.
And second of all, have him go to the bathroom, because if he's sitting in his seat and going to vomit, excuse himself. I don't care if the seatbelt light is on. Go to the washroom. The bag is not going to help.
It's been a tough industry to be in because of energy prices and those fuel costs have been going up.
8 minutes ahead of the opening bell, Dow futures are up 37. The NASDAQ 100 futures are 36 points higher, and you're listening to E-Trade On Air. Surf's up, so let's catch the wave with Dave Goodboy. He is our resident stock picker. Goes by the screen name Market Surfer because he's always surfing out there for unique stocks. Stocks that are probably off your own radar screen, you've never heard of, or you've never considered as an investment opportunity. And Dave, you know, while the large cap tech stocks have wilted, this has really been boom time for a lot of what you do, and that is picking small cap many times names that are kind of beneath the radar screen of many investors.
It sure has been, Jonathan. This morning I'm looking at Matson Technology, ticker symbol MTSN. This is a prime example of a beat-down semiconductor company that is starting to exhibit serious bullish signs.
They've beat down. It's up 60% year-to-date, $16 a share.
I know, but look at the last 52 weeks.
Do I want to? Oh, man, down 61.
This thing was up at 40 in August.
So what's the catalyst that's going to bring it higher from a 16 and 5/16?
Well, there's a couple of things going on here. It looks like it's breaking out of a base that has been built over the last 6 months, which is a very bullish sign. And a technical term called the MACD, or Moving Average Convergence Divergence Lines, have just turned bullish, which is why I'm looking at it right now.
So technically the stock looks strong, and even as Prudential downgrading some of the semiconductor stocks last week, you still think that maybe they have some room to go here?
I sure do. Well, it has a relative strength rating of 94. And fundamentally, the sales are up remarkably for the year.
You have a position in the stock, Dave?
I don't right now. What my strategy is I'm planning to buy it at 17 with my stops at 15, and I have a goal of 24 for the stock.
All right. Well, if you want to check out Dave's portfolio, he ranks all of his stocks over at marketsurfer.com, and he joins us every morning for E-Trade on Air.
The bulls are charging toward Wall Street this morning. It's about 6 minutes ahead of the opening bell. NASDAQ futures up 36.50, S&P's up 6.60, and the Dow Jones Industrials futures are up 42. But in the meantime, let's check in with WebFN's Angie Miles, and she's down at the Chicago Board Options Exchange. Angie, what's happening, particularly with this JDS Uniphase news?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm thinking Sound of Music right now. You know why?
Are the hills alive?
We're going to the Abbey. The Abbey Joseph Cohen. Big talk today coming from the Goldman Sachs analyst, making a difference with stocks like a JDSU, which is out with a warning. Doesn't seem to matter. The futures are popping right now. They're showing us some good numbers. Again, the Goldman Sachs chief coming out and telling her clients to buy U.S. stocks. And she's the third person to do so this week among the big market gurus. Merrill Lynch was out earlier. Morgan Stanley, Dean Witter also out. JDSU, the number one fiber optic parts supplier, saying it sees some disappointing outlook as well. Says that the third and the fourth quarters could be a little bit rocky for the company. Lehman out talking about JDSU today. They are cutting the first year 01 views to 65 cents down from 72 cents, but they're still saying that JDSU is positioned very well in the optical components segment.
Sorry, go ahead. Angie, are you seeing a ripple effect with some of the other stocks like Broadcom or Intel?
Exactly. But it's interesting. Here's the deal. They're granting some sort of immunity to JDSU because shares are trading up. They were up as high as $29. They're at $28.15/16, and that is up from the $28 close. But Broadcom is the sore thumb right now. Shares are down right now by a couple dollars after it closed at 47. Broadcom was also out with a warning. They're warning on the first quarter. So they're being a little bit selective here right now.
Interesting. What else is happening down there? What are you hearing?
Well, Intel came out with some news as well. They didn't really give us any numbers, but the chairman says don't expect for this chip supply problem to turn around anytime soon. INTC shares are up about a dollar or so in the pre-market, so they're doing very nicely as well. Let's see what else we have
going.
What
about the chip equipment and fiber optic testing company Newport?
Oh, they are flying this morning. Yeah, came out with some really good numbers. They had to actually upward revise the numbers for 01. They had been looking for about 15 cents per share. Now they're looking anywhere from 17 to 20 cents per share. Newport shares are up by $6 right now in the pre-market.
You know, I want to switch gears for a second, Angie, to the financial services company in light of all this information that's coming out, particularly from Abbey Joseph Cohen, the economist over at Goldman Sachs. What are you hearing about, say, like the Bear Stearns of the world?
Well, Bear Stearns actually started doing some trading as well last night in extended hour, but yesterday they came out and said they're going to have to cut more than 3% of their staff, and they're having a hard time meeting the first quarter earnings estimate because of the stock market slump that's been going on. It closed last night at $54.59. But as you know, a lot of these brokerages are having a tough time. Some people are even saying February was absolutely brutal.
Well, with the cutbacks with jobs and in the technology and media, they're projecting fewer mergers, fewer acquisitions.
Exactly.
Obviously, there'll be fewer demand. But thanks so much for joining us this morning, Angie. Okay, we've been speaking with Angie Miles from the Chicago Board Options Exchange.
Still to come on E-Trade On Air later on this half hour, a unique indicator, the cardboard box indicator. See how Wall Street responds to that, as well as spending a minute with the Motley Fool and the ringing of the bell in the New York Stock Exchange. Next at E-Trade On Air.
Live coverage of today's opening bell on Wall Street is brought to you in part by RIDEX Funds, an innovator in indexing.
You're listening to live sound from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Just seconds ahead of the opening bell, we had a stronger futures market. Stocks to watch include Broadcom, BRCM, company dropped in pre-open trading after it cut its outlook for the first quarter. Also, Intel, INTC CEO Andy Grove had some negative things to say about Intel. That company suffered a downgrade from Witt Soundview this morning. Price target now 37 versus 41. And Kate, you were talking about JDS Uniphase as well, JDSU.
We'll have to keep our eyes on that this morning. But well, you know what I'm looking at is there are, in the WallStreetJournal.com this morning and CNNFN.com, hints that WorldCom is putting itself up for sale.
Not going to happen.
You know, I'm watching WorldCom right now here at the opening gate, and boy, what a nice pop-up,
7%.
Yeah, more than a dollar to the upside, just below $18 a share right now. And this is, of course, bouncing off a 52-week low.
You know, Tom, I think the question is, it could be up for sale. Bernie Ebers over there, the CEO, obviously wants to get something going with this stock price. But who would be a potential acquirer?
That's the one thing in all the media reports that we're getting that WorldCom could be up for sale is there's no talk of who would be a buyer. The only way WorldCom can be on the block is if someone is willing to fork out the money to buy it.
Essentially, it's a long-distance company.
All this is a, exactly. It's an old-school, old-line, long-distance company that doesn't have much exposure anywhere else. It's a little bit of fiber optic, a little bit of direct satellite communication. I mean, there's a couple of names that's been talked about in weeks past, but I mean, the one name perhaps that may be floating out there, and I'll float it myself, Global Crossing may be interested in buying WorldCom perhaps. I don't know.
Interesting. I was thinking, and of course, you know, this is British Telecom, ticker BTY.
Perhaps if they want to get into the old school line long distance game here in the U.S.
They were in talks with AT&T, so we'll have to.
Well, they certainly have a business venture called Concert already with AT&T, but that's basically been falling apart because AT&T and British Telecom realizing that this third venture between the two of them is competing with the home companies themselves.
WorldCom really seeing a pop this morning, though. Last trade, 17.78, up about a buck and an eighth, up 7.12%.
The Dow Jones Industrials are 15 points higher. The NASDAQ Composite almost 40 higher. And guys, I want to ask you about this Abby Joseph Cohn news because we had a lower futures market the whole morning long. Then Abby came out. She is, of course, I call her Abby like I know her. Abby Joseph Cohn, she's the very influential strategist at Goldman. She came out. She upped her equity allocation, and the futures took off. What do you make of this, Hudson?
Well, listen, I want to know what you make of this because I want to split out the numbers here. She's upping her equities exposure up to 70%. That's up from 65%. But what I found most interesting is she dropping her cash position down to zero. And one of those mantras there over at the Capitalist Pig Fund is cash is king.
Cash is king, and it's certainly not trash. I mean, listen, you know, you can't argue with Abby Joseph Cohn. She can tell her clients to do whatever she wants. But the truth is that she has been 65% invested for the entire year, which has been obvious. This is the one-year anniversary of the worst year ever for the NASDAQ 100. So, I mean, to me, it's more like a short-term reaction than necessarily a long-term effect. I mean, you know, we got a pop today on this news about Abby Joseph Cohn. How long that will last necessarily, I don't know. I mean, I think if anything we learned in the year 2000 was that you have to take everything these analysts say with a big grain of salt. And just because Abby Joseph Cohn's upping her equity allocation doesn't mean that listeners should or that even
well,
we
it's certainly been good for a couple of points here at the opening bell, most definitely.
Well, also, in terms of the cash position, that was the most interesting part, I thought, of the report. There's been a lot of cash on the sidelines. The fact that Abby Joseph Cohn is fully vested, does that mean the mutual funds will jump in? I mean, we might see a lot more money supply in the coming months if this is indeed a trend.
Yeah, but Kate, there has been some cash on the sidelines, but guys, it never reached that those like recessionary levels that we saw in 1990. In 1990, there was 12% of mutual fund assets were in cash. We got up to the 6 and 7%.
Yeah, we got to about half that, maybe.
Half of that. So I think it's hard to really make the argument that there's been tons of cash just waiting to come back into this market.
No, it's not hard to make that argument because there has been tons of cash. I mean, we're talking in the hundreds of billions of dollars
that have been flowing into money markets.
The
question
markets.
Is then, where is it going to go? Is it going to go into the old leaders or the new leaders? And I think that's really the question people are
Absolutely.
Asking.
Absolutely. I mean, and is it going to go into equities or bond funds? And if it does go into equity funds, is it going into growth or value funds? What type of funds will it go into if it goes into them at all?
Money follows performance, in my experience. And it's really hard to make an argument that the performance of anything that in the NASDAQ 100 has been anything other than atrocious these last couple of weeks. I mean, no one knows the future, but I think that if you had to be putting money to work in the market these days, you'd want to go to where the action has been. It's more along the lines of, frankly, the stocks that the gentleman from Heartland Fund was talking about versus Cisco Systems. I mean, Cisco Systems, it's a great company, but it's going to have to it's going to have to increase 100% from current levels just to get back to where it was a year ago. And how many stocks do you know that are going to gain 100% and then still be back to pre-correction levels?
Jonathan, you bring up a good point. The money does follow performance, but I think in light of what happened with the tech wreck, perhaps this time, second time around or 10th time around, money may follow safety as well. We were talking earlier in the show about the power of the dividend. Perhaps we'll see monies flowing into some of these more old economy stocks. It's safer. Of course, the growth rates are much slower, but then you always have that dividend waiting on the sidelines.
Better visibility is, the buzzword these days. Dow is higher, 40 points. The NASDAQ Composite, 38 points higher. And you're listening to E-Trade On Air. We look at a lot of economic indicators. I should say you fundamental people look at a lot of economic indicators. You got consumer confidence, unemployment, producer prices. Even one TV station takes a look at Alan Greenspan's briefcase as an indicator of monetary policy. But here's probably one indicator you probably never heard of, the cardboard box indicator. What is it, and what is it telling us about the economy right now? Well, joining us on the line is Jim Smith. He is economist and professor at the Keegan Flager School of Business at the University of North Carolina. So, Jim, let me get this straight. Everything in America, everything in the world, basically, is shipped in a cardboard box. So from the level of ordering of cardboard boxes themselves, we can glean a bit of insight as to how strong or weak the economy is?
Well, you get an early bit of insight, by the way. It's Keenan Flagler Business School. An early insight because almost everything except the cars, trucks, airplanes, and ships moves in a box, whether it's a computer or a Palm Pilot or a refrigerator. And the boxes go before the product does. So as linerboard shipments, which are what's used to make boxes, go up or down, we have a good idea of whether or not the economy is going to pick up or slow down. Obviously, we do not ship consultants' advice or operations or other things in boxes, but the box shipment indicator has been a good one for 70 or 80 years now, and almost never leads us astray.
What is it telling you right now, Jim?
It's telling us that we're wobbling along at some whopping number like 1% growth, maybe 1.5, maybe only 0.5. It's come down a lot from a year ago. Not so far as Cisco Systems, as you all were just discussing, but it has come down a lot from last year, and it's kind of bumping along a relatively low level, which is it's usually a very good advance indicator of industrial production, and that's usually a good advance indicator.
Thought we'd take a look at some of the stocks that manufacture those cardboard boxes. Smurfette Stone Container, ticker there is SS. CC Smurfette Stone, last trade 15.25. That company is basically unchanged the year. Georgia Pacific, ticker there is GP, also unchanged. And International Paper, a stock in which I have a position in, is down about 2% year to date. So, Jim, I probably think you'd expect we'd see the stocks perk up if the orders started perking up for some of these cardboard box products.
For the ones where boxes are a very, you know, like those three, where it's a major share of the overall company operation. I mean, Weyerhaeuser's big in boxes, but they're a whole lot bigger in the growing trees, and so you'd have to, you know, they're driven a lot more by what happens to housing, and fortunately for them, that market stayed pretty strong.
Jim Smith is economist and professor at the Keegan Flager School of Business at the University of North Carolina. 8 minutes after the opening bell, you're listening to E-Trade On Air.
Okay, fellas, it's time for the Motley Fool Minute. Napster is all over the news today, but you can be sure someone we'll come up with a similar service that'll let people swap music files for free.
I'm Steve Broido with today's Motley Fool Technology Report. Send in the clones. With Napster facing an uncertain future, a Canadian web entrepreneur is working on an alternative to the popular music swapping service. And while other music sharing sites already exist, Matt Goyer's idea has something that the others don't. It floats. According to the Canadian newspaper Globe and Mail, the 21-year-old student wants to operate his service from an ocean platform off the coast of Britain. In setting up shop offshore, Goyer would avoid U.S. copyright laws and escape the reach of the record industry. But Goyer's service could face some stiff competition from song-swapping sites like Nutella, Aimster, and Freenet. And in this sea of online music choices, it remains to be seen whether an offshore site can make serious waves. I'm Steve Broido with today's Motley Fool Technology Report. For financial advice you can actually understand, come to fool.com.
How incredibly innovative. It's fantastic, isn't it? I mean, I thought there was a guy out in San Francisco who, in order to search for titles, what he did was he switched the titles into Pig Latin so he wouldn't get caught. I thought that was innovative.
That's one of the things that Napster is trying to wrestle with because, you know, it has to put these filters in by the song titles, and you change the song title around, and lo and behold, the filter doesn't work anymore.
How would you say Puff Daddy in Pig Latin? Uff pay, daddy pay.
I love the ocean liner in the middle of the ocean, though. That's terrific. All right, lots more to come. You're listening to E-Trade on air.
Turning now to some other stocks to keep your eye on today. We have the E-Trade Most Active list, which highlights some of the most actively traded NASDAQ shares on E-Trade. Topping that list, Amazon.com, AMZN. Also actively traded is Broadcom and Veritas. Let's start with Amazon. Now, guys, this stock was higher most of the day yesterday on news that perhaps they were going to have a distribution deal with Walmart. Then towards the end of the day, that rumor was refuted, and the stock just fell out of bed. AMZN. Hudson, is this the typical NASDAQ internet stock boom to bust down 90%?
Well, it sure looks like it just over the past 48 hours. I mean, you get the rumor, and the rumor coming from the Sunday Times in the UK, that Walmart and Amazon.com have been talking for many weeks now about some kind of distribution deal where the two would shake each other's hands. Walmart would get Amazon's expertise in online ordering and delivering. Amazon.com would get exposure in about 4,500 Walmart stores. And that was good for several percent point move to the upside for this Amazon.com stock price. But then out came the reports from both companies trying to kind of not necessarily scuttle the talk altogether, but at least calm down some of the rhetoric that perhaps it may not happen as soon as possible. And look, today it's still giving up about a percent, down to $11.75 a share.
Another example where do your homework. That report coming out of the Sunday Times was very poorly sourced, if sourced at all, Tom. We talked about this yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so,
stock also actively traded on E-Trade is Broadcom, BRCM. Stock's down about 7% this morning and way off its 52-week high, 274, and it's trading this morning right near its 50-week low of $44 a share. Also, Veritas Software, VRTS, one of the names that Greg Temmel mentioned among the actively traded stocks on E-Trade.
That's been an interesting one to watch because that initially got caught up in that Oracle debacle from last week when Oracle warned Veritas, also a database software company. But then Veritas came out yesterday saying that it was very comfortable with its latest quarterly earnings estimates and it expected to please Wall Street quite a bit and saw a nice bump there yesterday. Today, a little bit of a give back by 0.375.
Well, if you'd like to follow the most actively traded NASDAQ stocks on E-Trade, head over to the community page. You'll find it at etrade.com.
Coming up on E-Trade on Air, the value of brands and what's it worth. Net news, of course, will be surfing the cyberspace and the answer to today's cash quiz. All next at E-Trade on Air.
Frustrated by the IRS Schedule D and filing taxes for your investments? Let Gainskeeper.com help solve your capital gains tax headaches. Gainskeeper automatically adjusts for wash sales and corporate actions. Keep your gains. Log on to Gainskeeper.com today.
What's in a name? Shakespeare asked that question centuries ago. Today, it is no less important. Joining us on the newsline is Jim Harris, CEO and founder of ThoughtStep, which is a Chicago-based marketing firm that specializes in brand management. Jim, welcome to the show.
Morning, Kate. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Well, let's get right down to the nuts and bolts of it. I imagine it must vary from company to company, but how important is a company's brand name to the bottom line?
Well, I think it's extremely important. If you thought about potentially the Coca-Cola company and having all of their assets burned to the ground tomorrow, they could go and get the financing to start the company back up and not miss a beat, simply on the power of that Contour bottle.
You know, more specifically, let's take a look at Heinz for a second.
Do we have to?
Do we have to? Exactly. The company, as we know, warned yesterday saying that high energy prices and soft tuna pricing would hurt next quarter's earnings. But kind of more specifically from the brand front, if a company makes a misstep, for instance, in the case, remember the green ketchup debacle?
Of course.
In your experience, can the price of a company's stock take a direct hit as a result of a marketing mishap?
Absolutely. With Heinz, I think it's much less a case. The green ketchup debacle, as you called it, might actually turn out to be something positive for them. I mean, as much as they've been soft on that idea and it's taken somewhat of a bashing in the press, you can think of it the same way that Coke experimented with some things like OK Cola or Miller with Red Dog. You know, what you need to do is get people talking about the category, particularly a category that you lead. And then if you can transfer that energy to your core franchise, I think you're going to come out okay. Heinz may be the beneficiary of a lot more people talking about ketchup. And as you know, they did achieve their all-time high market share in the category in this past quarter.
Jim, that's interesting. Staying in the same sort of area, what is it the same with the tuna? You know, they're packaging tuna in these icky vacuum-sealed pouches. Do you think that people were talking about it? I mean, what do you think about the way it looks on the shelves?
It's funny. I mean, I think that's a great point. I mean, you talk about green ketchup, and adults say, why on earth would anyone ever try green ketchup? And yet my 5-year-old daughter loves green ketchup.
Right.
With tuna, I'm not so sure. I think that the tuna idea... Unfortunately, Heinz also makes 9 Lives, and I think that idea from a consumer standpoint reminds me a lot more of a pouch of cat food than it does human food.
Exactly. Again, we're speaking with Jim Harris, who's the CEO and founder of ThoughtStep, the Chicago-based marketing firm. Jim, just switching gears for a second, let's take a brand that I know you think has been tremendously effective, Bud and Bud Light. What's your thinking there?
Well, that's, the King of Beers has done a masterful job at managing mega branding, the Bud and Bud Light brands, doing sort of the Shaq and Kobe act. You've got a definition of a brand that speaks to King of Beers and that honor and that popularity and that heritage and that quality and that sense of fun and camaraderie. That really represent what the beer category is.
Right.
And so what they've done with Bud and Bud Light is let each of them take various phases of what that brand personality is and deliver it.
You know, bringing it back to the individual investor or the actual sort of stock price, so to speak, does this make Anheuser-Busch, which is obviously the maker of Bud and Bud Light, does this make a more viable stock than, say, a Coors, which I know has had some marketing problems of its own?
Yeah, clearly it does. And Anheuser-Busch is a very fine company for a number of reasons, but not the least of which is the fact that they've managed their brand so well. Coors has always found a way, and I haven't really looked carefully at Coors in the last couple of years, but they had always found a way to find a little bit of an earnings surprise or a little bit of an aluminum price issue in their cans or something like that, when, in fact, they've sort of lost their way. They had the magic bullet with the silver bullet years ago in
right.
redefining what the light beer category could have meant with a simple proposition, which was called "Won't Slow You Down."
That was
it's
very
a great way to talk about.
That was very popular with traders on Wall Street. I was an investment banker at the time, and I remember everybody was drinking the silver bullet.
Well, think about Miller Lite defined the light beer category. They said what light beer is this beer that tastes great and is less filling, so you can drink more of it. And here was this idea of what the benefit of that is, which is really the higher ground for any brand, is it won't slow you down. Great idea.
Great idea.
Long gone.
Okay, just switching gears for a second. We just have a couple more minutes. I wanted to ask you, with your expertise, ask you about AT&T, simply because when I think AT&T and I think about the ad campaign right now, I can't even conjure up an image.
yeah, what a tragedy. You know, they have morphed that idea from the majesty of an idea, an advertising idea, like the You Will campaign of years ago, where they promised what the future was going to look like, and Guess who's going to be bringing it to you. So now you've got this sort of bouncing ball, which is softening up the Death Star logo, you know, bounces around and tells you there's this thing out there. It's called AT&T. But, you know, the problem with AT&T's brand strategy is now it's 12 companies. Now, I mean, now it's four companies, basically. And as a consumer, you know, they've existed kind of like United Airlines has existed with a, you know, sort of better brand than an actual product for some time now. And, it, you know, it's very unfortunate. I mean, if you had... you know, the promise of AT&T was somewhat of a single bill, single point of contact, quality services kind of, you know, bundling mentality. And what you've got now is more of a bungling mentality. I mean, you've got five bills for five services. You've got five phone numbers, five websites, five everything else. And so, you know, they've got a long way to go.
Well, Jim, it sounds like AT&T could use some of your consulting services.
www.thoughtstep.com.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for joining us today, Jim.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Jim Harris, CEO and founder of ThoughtStep, which is a Chicago-based marketing firm that specializes in brand identity. You're listening to E-Trade on Air.
Minutes after the opening bell, I want to update some of the stocks that Jim mentioned. Budweiser is trading up about 1%, $42.06. And Bud, in fact, has been a nice safe haven, up 35% over the last 12 months. AT&T, of course, not so good over at AT&T. That stock is down 56%. Last trade, 56% over the last 12 months, not today. Although you wouldn't be surprised, would you, Hudson?
Be careful there.
AT&T is trading up about 1% today, $24.40, but still way off its 52-week high of $61 a share. Well, I spent all morning, of course, on Napster. Napster's getting shut down, so I had to get all my Eazy-E and Jay-Z and Puff Daddy. I had to get all that. So I was surfing the web this morning looking for songs. But, Tom, what were you looking at?
I was looking at, believe it or not, some economic news over at Bloomberg.com. Most Wall Street bond dealers, according to Bloomberg, who deal directly with the Federal Reserve, these are the people that are closest to the Fed, they expect the central bank to cut interest rates by a half percentage point on its March 20th policy meeting. That would put down that short-term interest rate down to 5%. Just three of the firms, though, only put a 50% chance on an intermeeting cut sometime as early as next week. So the chances of that happening before March 20 appear to be going down. WashingtonPost.com talks about the Global Internet Summit. You know, this thing a year ago in suburban Washington was the place to be, talking about how the internet would all but save the world from disaster, quite frankly. Well, this year... it's kind of been tethered
attendance
back
a little
to Earth.
Waning.
Attendance is waning. Last year, it was about 1,000 people. This year, fewer than 700 showing up. Last year, talking about how the internet would bring about broad economic and social change. This year, they're saying, well, that may happen, but it could also happen in a climate of layoffs, bankruptcy, and sinking stocks.
Well, what we've seen is a lot of stocks that were internet stocks have come down to earth, but a lot of companies that were quote-unquote old economy stocks have begun to develop internet presences.
Absolutely, and some of them having some problems doing that. I mean, look at the instance for the talk between Walmart and Amazon is because the Walmart.com just can't get up and off the ground in a very competitive atmosphere out there in cyberspace. Mm-hmm. Over at USAtoday.com, a couple of top economic advisors to President Bush are selling some of their multi-million dollar stakes in companies that they once led. This was all about a debate that was actually sparked by the U.S. Treasury Secretary, a guy by the name of Paul O'Neill, who used to be the CEO over at Alcoa, ticker symbol AA, and he is not letting go of his ownership of almost $100 billion in shares and options of Alcoa stock. However, a couple other guys
He has $100 million in Alcoa?
In shares and options. Well, he was CEO for 13 years. Those things add up, you know.
No wonder he
backs million
the
here, a million there, and pretty soon you know you got $100 million in options.
No wonder he likes that strong dollar policy.
He likes that tax cut.
The federal budget director, Mitchell Daniels, sold almost $38 million in Eli Lilly shares. LLY is the ticker symbol there. He used to be the head of Eli Lilly. And then we have the Commerce Department Secretary Donald Evans, used to be the chief executive officer of a Denver-based oil and gas company called Tom Brown. TMBR is the symbol there. He holds about 937,000 shares in options of Tom Brown. according to his most recent federal finance filing report. Over at BusinessWire.com, interesting study here released by the Integrated Benefits Institute questions the wisdom of evaluating health plan effectiveness by looking only at the cost of medical treatment. You have to look at other things involved in there, according to the study, including disability absences and lost productivity when people are sick or, say, for instance, come down with, I don't know, laryngitis or something.
Yes, of course. Well, you've been suffering a
Absolutely.
Bit from that.
Absolutely. ChicagoTribune.com and Chicago.Tribune.com. We all need to be talking about what's going to happen at the movie theater this summer if we get a writer's strike and an actor's strike. Are we going to have any kind of like holiday pop around July 4th for a lot of these big movie studios? Well, in fact, the studios say yes. They have about a six-month backlog of films that they can roll out between July and the first of the year in 2002 if, in fact, the writers go on strike, as they're threatening to do early spring, and if the actors go on strike in early summer.
I'll tell you this, Tom. One of my clients is a Los Angeles-based screenwriter, and he says a couple companies, Disney specifically, is having him pump out script after script to load up for scripts just in case the writers do go
on. They're
doing
that, and they're stepping up production of those films as well. They're doing, you know, films in half the amount of time that they normally would under normal environment. But certainly we'll have to watch some of the stocks of these movie studios in relation to these labor issues.
But fellas, rolling out six months of films that have been on the shelf, it doesn't exactly sound like the creme de la creme.
Right. It's going to be like, you know, Ernest Saves Christmas again and again and again.
Grinch 10. 2, you know. Right. We can only wait.
That's Rambo 11.
That's net news.
And that is the sound of money and our daily cash quiz. Of course, I ask a question and you write in with your answer at etradeonair@etrade.com. The winner gets an E-Trade On Air t-shirt. Today's question had to do with the lovely and talented Miss Abby Joseph Cohn. Now, she is the chief market strategist at Goldman Sachs, in the news this morning because she has upped her equity allocation to 70%. I think I'm getting your laryngitis. Need a health plan over here. She's upped her equity allocation to 70% from 65%. Now, Fortune.com called Abby Joseph Cohn the eighth most powerful woman in business. Who was the first most powerful woman in business? Who was the top powerful woman in business according to Fortune.com? Was it A, Carly Fiorina from Hewlett-Packard, B, Debbie Hopkins from Lucent Technologies, or C, Meg Whitman? She is president and CEO at eBay.com. Let's go. Nina, I'm going to get to you. Let's go around the table now, beginning with WebFN's Tom Hudson. Tom?
You know, I really like Meg Whitman. I think she's done a marvelous job with eBay, and certainly it is a powerful presence out there in the internet marketplace. But I don't think that Meg Whitman is the most powerful person, according to Fortune, most powerful woman in business, according to Fortune. Certainly, Ms. Hopkins over at Lucent Technologies has a lot of work ahead of her with the problems over there at Lucent Technologies, so she may not be topping the list. But Carly Fiorina over at Hewlett-Packard, very well respected, one of the first outsiders to go into Hewlett-Packard to head up that company that has its tentacles in
Tom,
any
what's the answer,
all
right?
I'm going to go with A, with Carly Fiorina.
We have to make a whole show just for your answer to cash quiz.
You know, perhaps you want an explanation.
All right, now,
it.
Kate, we know you are one of the most powerful women in business. What's your guess?
Well, I am with Tom in this. Carly Fiorina, I think because, as Tom said, she did come in from the outside. I mean, we had Jill Barad over at Mattel that had quite a run over there, but she did come up through the ranks of the company. Carly came in and just started kicking butt. I'm going with Carly.
And behind the glass, our production staff are all going to go, you guys are smart. You're absolutely right. Carly Fiorina, age 46, she is chairman and CEO at Hewlett-Packard, and according to Fortune.com, the most powerful woman in business. Well, Andrea, who's another powerful woman in business, she called from Dallas, and she got the right answer, and she will get one of our new E-Trade On Air t-shirts. Now, we do cash quiz every day, so if you didn't win today, tune in tomorrow and play along. And as we wrap up the show with just about 28 minutes after the opening bell, let's check the market once again. We had a higher NASDAQ and Dow off the bat, and still do, in fact. The Dow building on its earlier gains, now up 70 points. The NASDAQ composite up about 18 points, 22-22. But, Kate, you think 1 year ago we were trading over 5,000. What a year it's been.
Indeed. Two companies in the news today, guys, Nintendo and Sony. This is a story that will surely raise the consciousness of my two co-hosts here, Reed Boys. Nintendo is rolling up its shirt sleeves to do fresh battle with Sony's PlayStation 2, and actually also taking on a new contestant, Microsoft's Xbox. This coming out with a new Game Boy device, Nintendo is. The ticker on that is NTDOY, and already has orders of 2.7 million games, but is only shipping 1 million. Does this hark back to Christmas season with Sony and PlayStation 2?
They couldn't get the PlayStations out fast enough.
Yeah. Do we know, though, if Nintendo's having production issues like Sony did, or if we don't, it's just trying to control supply and demand?
My sense is the company is controlling supply and demand. Do you know that this game market is a $17 billion market? And Honig and Hutsin, how much of this market have you guys plowed into it?
You know, I can only watch so many screens at once.
I haven't upgraded since Atari 2600.
And, of course, keeping an eye on two stocks that are on the downside this morning. JDS Uniphase trading about an eighth lower to 27 7/8 after lowering its guidance for the second time in 1 month. And Broadcom also trading down about 9% now on the heels of an earning warning. Although Abby Joseph Cohn, she has upgraded her equity allocation. She is the influential analyst at Goldman Sachs. And that will do it for E-Trade On Air. On behalf of Kate Bonner, my co-host, and Tom Hudson, my other esteemed co-host, I am Jonathan Honig saying thanks for tuning in. Want to, of course, thank our Chicago-based production staff and all of you for listening. Check us out on demand anytime at E-Trade Media Center or 1/2 hour before the opening bell. You'll find us right here for E-Trade On Air.
Before we go, our lawyers wanted us to tell you a few things about this show. The opinions expressed on E-Trade On Air are those of our contributors and not necessarily those of E-Trade Group Incorporated. Please keep in mind that these opinions do not constitute investment advice or recommendations from E-Trade Securities or E-Trade Group. Not all investments or investment strategies are suitable for all customers. Before you transact, get the facts. Do your research before you make any investment decision. After all, it's your money. This has been a production of E-Trade Group Incorporated. Copyright 2001.